Hi, I'm Vernon Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Clark Chang, OD, Director of Cornea Specialty Lenses at the Wills Eye Hospital and Director of Clinical Services at Vision Group Holdings. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Vancouver, Canada.
Way out on the West Coast, then?
Yes, neighboring Seattle, Washington. I love the rain.
What did your parents do?
My parents are in the, or they were in the financial industry. So currency exchange, future stock exchanges, that type of thing.
Wow. Talk about a stress-free life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was young, although I did most part of my growing up in Vancouver, Canada, I was actually born in Taiwan. And so when we were younger, I was extremely young when I left, but I remember to used to have to carry a lot of money in a bag for my parents, because at that time they weren't, I don't know why they didn't wire the funds, but I had to carry some of the funds in a bag and then transfer from branch to branch. And I was a really young kid. And you know, I would have millions of dollars in new Taiwanese dollar here is obviously a lot less, but it was a big amount of money for a little kid. And I kept thinking, I wonder if people know that I'm carrying this much money. So it was actually really, it was a lot of fun at the same time, very anxiety ridden as well.
Yeah. I mean, but on the one hand, you know, that's kind of a marvelous idea by your parents. Here, just turn over this little kid and have him take this case
right,
down
right.
The bank. Who's going to bother him? And on the other hand, it's like, oh my God, what are they thinking?
I was their money mule.
Okay. So obviously you're in the U.S. So why did you go to school in the U.S. and why did you decide to stay?
Okay. So two-part question. I came to U.S. mainly because I was always working. I was, I guess, quote unquote, searching for myself after I graduated from multiple programs. I just, every program I took, I didn't know what I wanted to become. And I get more qualifications, but I'm not sure how I was going to use those. So I graduated from animal biology major, thinking I was going to be a veterinarian. Not sure why that didn't pan out for me. I really just couldn't. I think I just wasn't committed to the idea. So afterwards, since my parents are in the financial, they have history in the financial sector, I thought I'll get a master's degree in business administration. Yeah, and it's one of those things that it'll allow you to do anything or it'll allow you to do nothing. Like, I wasn't quite sure even after that what I was going to do. So I decided I wasn't going to, so I took some break in between obviously graduating and going, deciding on optometry school. So I decided to, I knew I really wanted to do something in healthcare. I like the interaction with people, and I generally feel like I'm very good at being, you know, having empathy for people and or just enjoy the interaction when we're, you know, talking. So I decided I was just going to find different jobs in different health clinic and see which one I would like the most, and let that sort of like a healthcare Russian roulette, if you would, and let that decide which field I was going to enter. And I actually end up staying at a very sizable optometry clinic in Vancouver for multiple years, and moved up from being a front desk technician and then manage their human resource, that staffing, that type of thing. And then I decided that, you know, I've stayed here for multiple years now. This is probably something that I should do because I really enjoy it. And one of the, obviously, and I worked in process, worked with some 10 to 20 different optometrists. And although obviously they were all great and inspirational to me, but there was one person who really stood out for me, who I really looked up to and had a lot of after hour inspirational conversation with him, meaning him inspiring me in not giving up on what I want to do and chasing my dream. So I'm going to give him a shout out. First name is Hanif, and last name is Peru. And he graduated from at that time PCO and now Salus University in Philadelphia. So I thought if I could even become anywhere close to the type of person and doctor he is, I would be extremely happy. And I decided that I was going to make Philadelphia my first choice. And part two, why did I stay? And again, it's one of those things. It seems like every 7 years I didn't know what to do with myself. So it's like, I think it just happens to hit that cycle where I graduated, I was very inspired, wanted to do a residency, which I did in primary care. And then thereafter thought, you know, I want to do more. I don't know what to do. I'm not ready to go home yet. Not quite sure what I wanted to do. So I decided to look for other training opportunities and found one where in North Jersey, in Teaneck, New Jersey, where I could actually, with Peter Hirsch, Dr. Peter Hirsch and Dr. Donald Hirsch, where they were offering a fellowship in cornea and contact lenses. And that actually was the one thing I really wanted to focus on. And so after I got there and seeing the amount of research they were doing, we participated in multi-center clinical trials in cross-linking for one. There were a lot of other, you know, cutting-edge research that he was involved in and made me his sub-investigator. And I think I was just attracted to that idea of, I didn't realize you could do that. Even after having worked at a clinic for that many years, I didn't realize there were different modality outside of primary care. And obviously through my residency and during my training, I saw a little bit more of different settings and my externship rotation, but I didn't really see that mixture I was so attracted to, where you can have academia, research, and you know, and also private sector or private clinic. And that just was something that I thought I would really love to stay in this environment. So I decided to stay, and I did stay in that clinic for close to 9 years.
Why academia and not private practice then?
You know, I think if I would have left prior to, maybe even right after my residency, going back to Canada, I would have really enjoyed the private practice aspect. But you know, in Vancouver, British Columbia is the province where we don't, at least I don't believe anything has changed. We don't have there's not an academic institution affiliation that's possible there. So I really, you know, regardless of, I think, what experience everybody has through their training in optometry school and then perhaps residency or other type of further training, I remember that my mentors at the PC when I was going through my residency told me that, you know, the best way to learn is to teach. And I have to tell you, I wasn't really quite. So I'm sorry to everybody who if I did not respect that opinion at the time it was told to me. I thought, oh, it's just an excuse for somebody who just loves teaching. I'm not quite sure that that was true to me at the time. And the longer that I stayed in academic setting, such as the research clinical trial experiences at my time with Dr. Peter Hirsch, I realized that it was true. And in fact, I quite enjoy being able to process material that maybe is not digestible for other people and be able to internalize it myself, and then be able to then transfer it in a simpler content and in different packets and deliver that in multiple, you know, over multiple course of occasions or time, and seeing other people learning with me at the same time and appreciate the fact, the sort of the learning style that I was transferring or showing them. That was very gratifying to me. And I wasn't quite sure if I would get that in private practice.
How did the cornea become your passion, and why specialty contact lenses?
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I got back into optometry school after having taken a long break, prior to entering up, coming back to optometry school, I thought, you know, there's no way I would stay for residency. I've taken such a long break. I want to get my 4 years out and be done with and return to a private practice that I enjoy so much prior to being accepted into a PCO or Stylus University. So when I got there, I was super sort of motivated, where I wanted to multitask. I wanted to do everything. So I did well enough in my first year of optometry that I requested to do a dual program where I was doing another master degree study in low vision rehabilitation. And I was so inspired by the work that people, that I saw these low vision specialists and orientation mobility specialists and everyone else kind of coming together, helping somebody who is legally blind or profoundly blind to be able to mobilize in a safe manner within his or her own environment, that I thought I was going to actually specialize and do a residency training in low vision. So, and just to show you how much of a geek I was first year. I know I was entering this master program in low vision that I got accepted. I went to, and we're current, yes, the first year you sort of rotate through clinic by in a mode of observation. You don't really, you're observing a third or fourth year student. You don't really have that much interaction with faculty. I went to the, at that time, the main person, the main person who was leading the low vision care service in my in our hospital or the eye institute that's affiliated with Salus University, and I proclaimed that I'm going to become his resident in 3 years, and that I demanded his attention, and I wanted him to teach me and help me, and he pretty sure he took me on it just as a fun project, not ever thinking that I would follow through with what I said I would do. And I guess at some level he turned out to be right, because I did not do a low vision residency, but I will say I got his blessing for not doing a low vision residency. So I want to thank Dr. Richard Brilliant as well, who still is on faculty at Salus University. But the more the I think just a string of fortunate timing and going through many different clinics during my rotation, I saw a lot of cornea patients who needed contact lens afterwards, and obviously care before and after contact lens fitting. And I thought, you know, this is such a complete circle of the type of comprehensive care that we can give our patients, and sometimes maybe not at the primary care level, and that, you know, a lot of patients need this type of service that's not available because we're very in tune with diabetic retinopathy as optometrists. We're very in tune with macular degeneration and what kind of intervention people need. And so it seemed like a lot of things were geared towards, I feel like, retina and retinal related diseases and people and glaucoma, you know, again, optic nerve, which is posterior segment. So I feel like it, even though it sounds like cornea almost sounds like a very foreign concept to a lot of eye care professionals. It's a piece of clear tissue that they just happen to have to, you know, bypass to in you know, to be able to look at retina. So I feel like that is an area where most people don't really pay that much attention to when patients are really in need of care, and we don't have a lot of, you know, we don't have a lot of contact lens specialists around the country. There's definitely a small, you know, a group of them, but it's definitely not as pervasive as primary care or even, you know, people who specialize in taking care of glaucoma patients. And so I think that become my passion, and the fact that I feel like I could take care of patients from front to end in this type of in this area where I feel like I'd be a little bit more restricted in other disciplines. But that was just my own, that was just my own analysis, and it fits me.
What keeps you engaged in research then?
You receive the reward of research at the end, where you find your patient meeting your study primary, you know, your primary study endpoint, right? You set out to say, test this hypothesis, and I'm hoping to save patient from XYZ. And in fact, I hope that we could arrive at this more optimum set of parameters or situation for your patient. And I think that in itself offers a lot of reward, where you know, when you do find that something, a new modality, new treatment methodology is working, and your patient indeed are doing better compared to, you know, everyone else's, it's very satisfying, number one. And so then you continue, it's almost addictive, where then you want to continue to find improvement up on a method that you had just found and or participated in, and you know, become part of the team that propels it from being a, you know, onto the market and make it available. And so although it's very rewarding, and the end process is very rewarding, but it becomes addictive, where you want to constantly improve up on something or search for new, you know, in different new different treatment methods that other people may not have looked at before. And I think that just kind of keeps me really wanting to stay in, spend part of my time to stay connected with this type of academic situation and research situation.
Now, I have been told this because I haven't seen you speak, but you tend not to hide behind a podium during your lectures, and you also have a pretty conversational style. So, how did you develop your lecture style?
For me, I didn't really. I was put in a situation the first couple of years where I was surprised that people were coming to me and asking me if I would present the research findings. I mean, this is some 10 years ago when when I started my fellowship, so nine years ago. And so because at that time, for example, one thing that we were looking at was corneal cross-linking that I've never learned at school. I never knew it was possible. I thought it was a crazy idea to, put a vitamin B formulated drop called riboflavin onto the cornea and then illuminate the cornea with a certain UV light setting, and that somehow was going to change the trajectory of that disease. And so when I started talking to my colleagues, they all thought I was crazy as well. And I was like, yeah, so I don't really quite know that anybody wanted to listen to that. And so when I got asked to present that type of research finding and obviously other corneal topics and contact lens topics, I was honestly a little shocked. And so I often feel like I go in without preparing. I'm very prepared with my content. I was never really quite prepared with my style because I just felt like I didn't have enough time to take care of both, that I could only focus on these new information that I really passionately want to share with my audience and my colleagues. And I think I basically just let my whatever feels natural to me come to the podium. I just brought that with me. And if some people love it, some people don't, but I find it very humbling to be able to kind of look at the course review. I know many instructors don't make a point to look at that. I wanted to see what was resonating with people and what wasn't. And I think I do try to make a conscious effort many times. What if I, you know, when I, if I look at a negative review, of course it always bothers me. So people stop writing negative reviews about me, please. I'm just joking. No, it always humbles me that that people actually care enough about you to want to give you constructive criticism. And so I do make a conscious effort in sort of revamping or refining the style. But really at the beginning, I just feel like I was more content driven. I wanted to focus on bringing new information. So when I show up, whatever I feel like delivering that day in terms of my delivery style, which really just comes from my personality, and I just kind of let it fly. I'm learning still. I still feel like I have a long way to go in maybe refining methodology of my delivery that can resonate with even more people. So I look forward to being able to achieve that.
What's something that your colleagues don't know about you?
Well, I would say optometry wasn't my first choice. As much as people look at me now, and even when I was in, first year and trying to, study both programs of a low vision and your traditional optometry curriculum, people thought I was crazy and I was, trying to overachieve. And I think I was compensating for the fact that I just am kicking myself for taking so long for deciding on something that I would be so in love with. And so I think that's what I was doing, is I was overcompensating and always trying to sign up for different clubs, and I want to go on these, all these expeditions for different trips. And so I was involved in a lot of social clubs as well as, academic clubs and in school. And so people always thought that was really crazy. But I think it was shocked those people to know that optometry was not my first choice. I wanted to go to culinary school.
Oh, really?
Not that I know, not that I am a good chef, but I will tell you that I've been told by many people that I have a really good palate, that I can taste different things, and I can remember those tastes when I go through a certain meal. So I always thought that I have special interest in. I really appreciate the presentation of culinary science, and I feel like it is a form of science because you're mixing different ingredients, creating new taste and new smell and new sense, sensory feedback. So that actually was something that I wanted to do. And I, again, when before this is before optometry, I thought if I didn't couldn't find a way to get into culinary school or be accepted, I would then try optometry. And I actually never attempted to find out how to get involved with a culinary institute. For some reason, something, I think Hanif Peru, who I mentioned, who inspired me so much, kind of got me back on track to optometry. And I didn't really, never really talked about the idea of becoming a chef anymore. Again, not that I would be a good chef. I want to stress that. I don't want people to think I'm really good at cooking. I'm not. I'm really good at eating.
Well, that gets me to my next question then. What's your guilty pleasure food?
Guilty pleasure food. There are so many. Just because I enjoy dining, I enjoy eating so much. My guilty pleasure food.
You're in Philadelphia, home of the Philadelphia
I know, I know,
cheesesteak.
and I could pretty much just say hoagie, something like that, but that'd be too easy of a way out. But you know what? Maybe I will take it. I will say I'm gonna give it a twist. I will say like my guilty food. I love simple ingredients, and I love freshness that you can taste with each bite. And I will say that I feel like I often find that in a lot of different, mom and pop shops in like a Vietnamese sandwich store, for example. So like a Vietnamese hoagie with really spicy marinated vegetable on top, and then just complemented with a cup of really dark and strong Vietnamese coffee that is laced with a condensed milk. I would say those are that combination would be my guilty pleasure.
Where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
10 years from now, oh, I could barely see myself a year from now. Yeah, and honestly, even though I'm sort of joking, but there's some truth to that. It's hard to project too far ahead, at least for me. I mean, I understand that we're supposed to be organized and have your 2-year plan, 5-year plan, and 10-year plan. So, it's easy to say that and have that talk with your investor. It's not that easy to plan out your career that way, I don't think. So I think for me, 10 years from now, I mean, I certainly hope that I get to slow down a little bit, even though I'm nowhere near the retirement age. But there's a lot of traveling that has occurred in the course of my short career, which I so very highly appreciate. But they do take a toll on you at some point. So, and I have great respect for a lot of my colleagues in the on the speaker circuit who's everywhere, on a daily or weekly basis at a different place. I would love to continue to do that and be able to grow. I feel like I can be a very, I would love to aspire to become a liaison between not and between new research and knowledge that may not be a commonplace, and be a liaison and a channel of communication for between that and my colleagues and our optometric community. So I would love to continue to grow myself and be able to represent optometry, whether it's on podium of optometry meeting or even ophthalmology meeting. I would really love to do that. And so I'm going to say that in 10 years from now, I will come back and listen to this podcast and see if that has happened.
Do you have any regrets?
I think in the back of my mind, I have a tiny bit of a space for regretting that I didn't choose optometry sooner. Although at the same time, I've always been told by my other friends, you never know that if you would be this hungry and this motivated, had I selected optometry much earlier, I may have, it is possible that I would have just do my 4 years of training and then just not even talk of a residency and fellowship afterwards, and then just go back to private practice in Canada. That exists there, that strong, that's very, very possible. So perhaps everything worked out for the best.
What's something about optometry you'd like to change?
Well, I mean, in all honesty, I think that we have a very robust community within optometry. There's so much, as with every day and every advancing year, there's new things that new treatments and new options with the of a new treatment option, whether it's non-surgical like contact lenses or glasses, or even surgical that we get to participate in. So it's hard to, there's just so many things that's going on at the same time, and it's so exciting. I would say, although there's not much that can be changed at this moment or maybe needs to be changed, I would say drawing from my own personal experience, from my fellowship where I was, I didn't realize I would enjoy research as much as I do, and as much as I continue to feel the same way. I think that we have so much information that you need to learn within such a short period of time in your traditional optometric curriculum. A lot of times there's no time to learn to appreciate what clinical evidence and good clinical evidence, what that is, what makes a solid study that generates unmanipulated data or as objective as possible, and then how that is applied to real life practice and how that then go on and impact patients around the world, not just within your community. So I would say that if there's one thing I could change, I know our curriculum is packed as it is, but I would love to somehow be able to get people to understand and be even more and be more interested in be participating in research. I would love to bring that component into our training.
Last question, and we inflict this one on everyone. What was the craziest thing you've ever done?
Besides choosing optometry and giving up culinary training.
And being a cash mule.
Well, that's right. And being a cash mule. Yeah. I mean, I had a good career going on there.
Yeah.
What's the craziest thing I've ever done outside of those things? You know, this is where you're going to find me to be a very boring person. I am so good at not overextending myself. I'm quite trying to figure out what will be crazy. You know, I will tell you, and this may not be what people are looking for. It may not be the most fun evidence to show people that I am really a fun person. But I will tell you that I've always been told how crazy I am for wanting to, for graduating from optometry and then wanting to do a residency. And then thereafter, still feeling like that wasn't enough knowledge for me and wanting to go for more. I actually offered to do a second residency in my, I know most people are like, one is that I'm not even sure you need one, but which I will tell people, I think it's a great idea. And I didn't regret a minute of it. It was shocking and quote unquote crazy to a lot of my friends who know that I was going to give up another 2 years of pay, because I actually did a 2-year fellowship because 1 year wasn't enough. I did 1 year residency, and they thought that was so crazy. I was going to give up another 2 years of pay in exchange for more knowledge. And again, I know that's not a fun example of crazy, but I will tell you that a lot of people thought that was out of the world that I was willing to do that. Yeah, I spent my 2 years of fellowship with Peter Hirsch in North Jersey and loved it so much and stayed for close to 9 years.
Hopefully you got paid after him during those 9 years.
That's going to be my secret.
Oh. Well, Clark, not like you said, not exactly what I expected, but hey, we'll go with it.
We'll go with that, right?
Yeah, that'll go with that.
Sorry, you stumped me with that question. And I didn't know that I would be asked that kind of question about how crazy I am.
Well, I mean, you ever jump out of an airplane?
No, and I don't think I ever want to.
Well, Clark, that's all the questions I have for you. It's been great talking with you today. Thanks for taking time to chat with me.
Oh, thank you, Vernon. Thank you for inviting me. We'll do this again soon, I hope.
Well, yep, maybe in 10 years when you
yes,
to double check.
You and I will be witness to whether or not I do everything that I say I would do.
Okay, I'll send you a checklist.
All right, thank you very much.
Sure thing. Take it easy.